the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, that's us. Welcome back. Just crank it along. I tell you what, I don't know where the last hour went, but here we go with another one. Coming up this hour, more topics at the Brain Trust. That's our group of financial professionals that are going to do their absolute best to help you get to wherever it is that you need to go here with regard to your money. Now, we got some lines open, so if you want to get in touch with the Brain Trust, you can do so at our phone number, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. We got some emails coming in, too. We'll get to some of those. We didn't get to all of them last hour. You can email us at wealthed.com, wealthed.com. It's right there at the Find Your Answer link, and we'll try our best to get it on the air this hour. I'm Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, certified financial planner here with me from Lucia Capital Group. WealthEd, I mentioned that. That's where you're going to find the blog posts, audio, video, articles that we refer to on this program. Phone calls do take priority, though, so if you're on hold right now, or if you call right now, we'll get you up on the board right away, and we'll take those calls first. We just have a couple of lines open right now, so get on board. Wealth education, that's what we do on this program. It's what we try to provide you every day, and much of what you see and much of what you hear on our program can be found right there at wealthed.com. You can also contact the Brain Trust off the air. Their phone line is open, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. You give them a call, you meet with a Brain Trust advisor, and go over your individual situation and talk about your goals. Get your bucket strategy going. You can call Professor Plum or any of the Brain Trust advisors at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. That's the number off the air. We're going to try to talk to you a little bit more about some of these reverse mortgages later on, but we want to take some calls here to start the hour. 877-PLANNER, our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. That's the number on the air. Let's get to Scott first up this hour, Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you doing today?
Good, thank you. Quick question is a follow-up to a caller you had the previous hour had called in 66. He started collecting Social Security at age 62. He wanted to now do a suspension and then start collecting it again at 70. How does that situation differ from someone who, let's say, same age, same, would have been eligible for the same amount of monthly Social Security payment, who did not start collecting at 62 and said, I'm going to wait until 70. I won't collect anything until age 70. Does this guy that was collecting for 4 years and then suspended the same amount at age 70 as someone who waits to 70 to even begin collecting?
No. I mean, we're assuming that before they started collecting, before age 62, they had identical benefits at full retirement age. Let's just assume that they both had $2,000 benefits. They'd earned $2,000 benefits at age 66. Now, the first gentleman started taking his benefit at age 62, which means he's only getting $1,500 a month. And he does that for 4 years. And then at age 66, he suspends it, and then he waits until age 70. Whereas the other person never took anything and waited until age 70. The second person didn't take anything. So their $2,000 benefit that they've never taken would grow to, you know, call it $2,700 a month when they retire. So they'll get $2,700 a month going forward. But the other person received $18,000 a year for 4 years, right?
Right.
When they defer it, now they're going from, you know, what they were receiving up to $2,000 at age 70. It's not going to grow as much. It's as so they look at the number of months early the person took it and the number of months that they delayed it, and they net the number out, and they'll say, okay, he has a net that he took it at, you know, a couple months early, the net that he took it a couple months later, and so we're going to calculate it that way. Whereas the other person had no early months, so he has a net 48 months deferral. He gets the full delayed retirement credits for the full 48 months from 66 to 70. Whereas the other person, if he, you know, deferred it, or if he took it for 48 months and then deferred it, he suspended it and deferred it for the other 48 months, he has a zero delayed retirement credit. He'll get what he got at 66.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss something on that, because After you went through the steps with him, as far as what he was going to be able to do or not do, I thought, well, wait a minute, how's this guy going to get the same amount?
He's not going to get the same amount, but that doesn't mean that suspending doesn't still potentially make sense for him. If he, you know, first he said he was going to live to be a couple hundred years old.
We narrowed that down a little bit.
But as long as he's going to live to 90 or 95. Getting that, waiting for 4 years or 3.5 years now, and getting that extra $400, $500 a month for the rest of his life, okay, it doesn't go to 27. It only went to 2,000, but it's still a better deal if he lives long enough.
Okay, guys, thank you. I just wanted to clarify that. I appreciate it.
Okay, Scott, thank you for calling, and I should encourage people, too, if they hear something they're not sure about or clear on or want some clarification, we'll be more than happy to explain this. This was a caller that we had before. I think it might have been James, actually, who we had you had instructed to I'm sorry, he wanted to do a file and suspend.
He was thinking about suspending his benefit. He's 6.
Yes, and for about 3.5 years to allow it to grow.
So in his respects, I mean, he's going to defer it for 42 months, but he took it for 50-some months or
whatever it is,
54 months.
Four-plus years.
So it'll still look like he took it slightly early because he's still going to have more months of receiving it than he deferred it, but it will grow over the next 3.5 years. And so it will still make sense if he lives long enough to make it worthwhile. And now for James, also the original caller, he had the money that he could afford to do it. And so that is also one of the issues. Can you actually afford to not have your Social Security benefit?
Yeah, it's anytime you delay or decide you're going to hold off, it's going to have to be, you're going to have to add back on the back end, see how far you're going to live in order to make up for it. Because what you're doing, say, 8 years of checks between age 62 and 70, if you decide not to take those, whoever did take it at age 62 is that far money ahead.
For a while.
It's like the train leaving Chicago, heading eastward, at this mile an hour. Eventually, the faster train will catch up. Yeah.
This train leaves at 150 miles an hour.
Right.
But it gets eight miles ahead or 8 years ahead, and the other one leaves the track leaving 270 miles an hour.
Yes.
How long will it take the second one to catch the first one?
Right, and will you still be alive by the time the train actually overtakes the other one?
I hated those math problems. I really hated those.
I wasn't a big fan of it either. But that's really sort of the analogy right there.
And with the idea of them taking the a lot of people think that they've gotten rid of the file and suspend option altogether. No, they haven't gotten rid of the ability to suspend your benefit. They've only taken away the ability for you to suspend it and still allow somebody else to draw from your work benefit.
Yes.
And so where this is going to come into play, file and suspend, is something they've talked about for the last several years called the start-stop-start issue, where you start at age 62. Now, this assumes you're not working. You start at age 62, so somebody else, maybe a child that you had later in life or a disabled child that you have, can start receiving a benefit from your work record as soon as you hit 62, but they're going to fall off of your work record. Maybe it's, your child turns age 18. They're 14 now, and they're going to turn age 18 in 4 years, and they're going to fall off your work record anyway. So about the time you hit 66, 67, they fall off your work record. You suspend it at that point to get a little bit more growth for yourself over the last couple of years. No, it's not going to take it to the full age 70 benefit that you would have had if you waited all the way to 70, but you gave somebody else a benefit for 3, 4, 5 years, however many years it worked out to be, early. Or, I was speaking with somebody, we've done this in the past, where, you had a big difference in age between the husband and wife, 20-year difference I've seen. And so the individual started his benefit at 62, so his 42-year-old wife, who was caring for their 6-year-old twins, could get a benefit. So all three of them were able to get a benefit for a period of time, and then he suspended later and let it grow a little bit more. So there's different reasons to still maybe use the suspend option. It's just not the same reasons we used to use, or not as many reasons as we used to use, and it's not in many cases. Most people are not going to be able to use it, but it's still available for some people.
Now, you got to be full retirement age in order to do this.
To voluntarily suspend.
Yes, yes. Now, if you decide after a while that you We shouldn't have taken your Social Security. Some people just decide to go back to work, because if you go back to work, then you are supposed to suspend your benefit. Social Security
will suspend it. Or they're going to take it back either way.
From you. Yeah, but you're supposed to tell them that. If you want to suspend it right away, you tell them I'm going back to work.
It makes, well, you have to tell them that you are back to work and show that you are back to work.
Yes,
with the pay
of course,
stuff.
Yeah.
Because it just makes life a lot easier than them catching up to you 2-3 years later and saying, give me a check or we're just going to stop paying you for a while.
Yeah, and they will, even when you're eligible, they will stop paying you in order to collect that money back
they
or
will.
Make it even.
They're going to get their money back.
In one way or another.
Trust fund needs it.
I knew. See, I knew when I said that I was going to lead you down that path. Slippery slope right there, buddy. Okay, we got to take a break. And, man, the show is just cranking along. All right. Tell you what, we'll talk to Tony. Hang on, Tony, in Portland. We'll get to your question here when we come back. We'll give you enough time to ask it and to answer it on our side as well. We still have a couple of lines open. I think it's two lines open. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Call now with your money questions. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. It's Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Phone lines, a couple of them still open. 877-PLANNER. We've been taking calls all day long. And we'll 877-752-6637. Moving along to Tony in Portland, Oregon. Hello, Tony.
Hello, Brain Trust. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I recently applied for term life insurance. Finally got it approved. And I'm getting ready to sign off on it. And I just had a couple questions. They asked me all kind of questions, went back as far as 20, 30 years, did the physical, did the blood work. And I just want to make sure I'm not missing something. Is there a way for them to deny it, you know, 5-10 years down the road if I'm not here and, you know, they find some way to weasel out of it?
Generally, there is an incontestability period, and generally it's about 2 years. And so if you die in the next 2 years of some disease that you basically hid from them somehow, they're going to deny it. They'll give you family back or whoever your heirs are back the premiums you've paid, but they'll deny it. But after a couple of years, they can't deny it from bad information on the application.
Okay. So 2 years and I'm good.
Yeah. Three, look at your policy. There will be something called the incontestability period. That's in the small, it's in some of those pages in there somewhere in that big policy they gave you. But there is a time period, but it's not forever.
Okay. Fair enough. That's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
Okay, hey, Tony, thank you. Yeah, that's something else I think a lot of people aren't necessarily all that aware of.
Well, and a lot of times we're filling out these questions. You know, some of them are medical, and we're like, I don't think I've ever had that. I mean, you can't even pronounce the word, let alone, how do you know whether you've had that been diagnosed?
Do they do that to cover themselves down the line, or so that they can review everything before they pay? I don't understand.
Well, you are supposed to fill out and answer the questions.
No, of course.
And to the extent that you can answer them, you answer them. And you're not supposed to lie in any way, shape, or form, obviously. But the insurance company only has so much time to be able to go back and check, your medical records and other things. He said they went back a long time, so it sounds like anything that they would have found, they've already found. And so they're looking for things in your medical history that you may have answered differently, and they'll clarify this, but that's rare. After a couple of years, they can't go back and say, 22 years ago, he lied that he never had a headache or something. I don't know.
Well, what happens is you can put on, have you ever had a heart condition? If you put no, you never had, but you're sitting in the hospital recovering from a heart attack, filling out the form saying that you've never had one.
That's a different, but that also is going to show up on the medical exam.
Well, sure.
The medical reports.
Yes, because they're entitled to get those.
Right, you sign off a waiver saying, you can look at my medical records.
I suppose you could say, you can't look at my medical records. And then
I'm not giving you the insurance.
Exactly. What's the incontestability period?
Incontestability period.
Because it's usually like 2 years, as you said.
It's after that, they can't contest it.
Right, exactly. So it sounds to me like the 2 years is the period.
Fine.
Like you can contest it, but they've always called it the incontestability.
That's all I've seen.
That's all I've seen too. It's like everything else with.
It's like the suicide clause is in there. Usually, if there's a 2 or 3 year period of time that if you commit suicide after getting life insurance, they don't pay off, because they think that you're buying the life insurance basically in contemplation of committing suicide. So you're trying to make somebody, you know, the insurance company's looking back at your medical history saying there's no reason for this person to die, so we're willing to take this risk with them, but you're already contemplating offing yourself, and so that's not fair to the insurance company. So suicide in the first couple of years in most cases is not covered either. So rethink it, John, what you're...
No, please.
I'm teasing.
As you're saying that, I just thought of a interesting scenario, but it's too crass for me to even bring up on the air. I'll tell you off the air. Ways to get around that. I'm sorry. I'm not laughing at that, but you know. All right, 877-PLANNER, before I get in any more trouble here, 877-752-7. A couple of emails here. If you want to email us, you go to wealthed.com, our website, wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealthed.com. Rick in Pompano Beach, Florida. I listened to you guys last winter. Wow. And funded my buckets. We will tap number one, bucket number one, in 2 years. And with the way the market is, it was a good move. We can ride out the storm for 8 years without a worry. The market will bounce back by then. That's all he says. Maybe just a...
It was just a comment.
Some comment, yeah.
The market should bounce back by then. You can't really say will. We hope it does, and we expect it to, but yeah, it should. But that's why we look at creating buckets of money for an investment strategy to create income, or to create cash flow, I should say, in retirement. And so that you can retire when you want to retire, regardless of what the market is doing. That's the whole idea. You don't want to let your retirement date be dictated by, is the market in a good mood or a bad mood? You know, right now we've been watching it for the last couple of months, and it's been in a fairly bad mood. And that means if I wanted to retire right now, but I was relying on some extra growth out of the market and I didn't get it, and my portfolio is actually down right now, and I don't have enough money to retire, I'm in a bad mood because I can't choose when to retire. So before you get to retirement, you want to set your buckets up. And he did it at a very nice, appropriate time when the market was still higher than normal. It was at least on the upswing, because the market started turning down in August last year. So when's the best time to do your buckets plan? When you have the money to retire and you don't have to worry about it. So you don't wait till the last minute to do your buckets. You set them up as you go along and get closer to retirement. Just so if you have a bad day, if the market, I should say, has a bad day, bad month, bad year, just before you want to retire, or in many cases worse, just after you retire,
You
can still do what you want to do. The market is not the dictating factor on when you do or do not retire. That's your choice. You should keep that choice. You should take control of that choice and don't turn it over to the markets.
Now, you're saying you don't want to set up your buckets right before you retire, because what we've seen is somebody who's got a good portion of their assets in let's call it stocks or whatever. They haven't quite, maybe they have 80% or 75-80%. They're
trying to get a little more juice out of it before they retire.
Right,
and
exactly.
They wanted to retire in 2001.
And then, or
2002, 2008, 2009, 2010.
Right, and so now let's call it 2009. It's everything's down, and they got to set up their bucket one, but they're going to have to do something to get rid of their.
So their choice
equities.
At that point is to
sell off.
Sell when it's down, ugly. Not retire, ugly, or unfortunately not have the choice of either, and not have the ability to continue working because your job went away and you have to sell, even uglier. So take control of your financial life. Don't leave it up to chance. And that's why we talk about starting your bucket strategy at least 5 years ahead of when you actually want to pull the trigger and retire. And for everybody, that even if you don't want to retire in the next 5 years, you should have some money in a safer environment, either for emergencies, loss of job for a year or two, or opportunities. Because when would have been a really good time to have some cash on the sidelines to buy into the market? Well, maybe late 2008, 2009, even later 2009, after it started to recover a little bit. Those would have been very good times to maybe have some opportunity cash to invest. Hard to do, but it's a discipline that can work.
Well, it's a discipline that can work, and if you're used to doing it, no matter what the market is doing. Because you didn't know in March of 2009 that was the bottom.
If it's up more than expected, sell. If it's down a lot more than expected, buy. And when it goes down, more.
That's the strategy. Okay. 877-PLANNER. We're going to take a break here, but we got some more emails and phone calls. We got some lines open right now, finally. So your chance to call right now. Ask your money question. 877-752-6637. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group on Bucket Strategy Investing. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Hey, we got some room on the phone, so take advantage. 877-PLANNER. P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Emails, you go to wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com, at the Find Your Answer link. And any question that you have on anything at all, you can ask us here via email or just give us a call at that number, 877-PLANNER. Also, you can ask your questions, whatever questions you have, in person at the Lucia Capital Group Retirement Income Strategies Workshops. There are a couple of more coming up here. In fact, several more still ahead. This Saturday will be the next one, like 48 hours away, Seattle, Washington. Professor Plum is he's getting ready to go. You're leaving tomorrow.
Yes, I am.
Yes, flying out tomorrow. Going to join the folks in Seattle on Saturday morning, February 27th at the Hilton SeaTac. We would love to see you there if you're a viewer or a listener. We have some longtime audience members that show up at these, and it's great. But if you've never been, I would suggest you go and learn a little bit about what we do and these retirement income strategies. So join the Brain Trust in Seattle this Saturday, February 27th. WealthEd.com is where you sign up. March 12th, a couple of weeks from now, that'll be Phoenix, Arizona. And then Portland, Oregon happens on the 19th of March. Seattle, Phoenix, and Portland, the next three. There will be more after that. All you do is you go to wealthed.com, find out where at the live events tab, wealthed.com. And if we're not, for whatever reason, in a city where you are and you'd like us to see to be there, us and tell us, and we'll put it maybe on the fall schedule because we're kind of out of time for the spring series. Now, if you live in, if you live in Minneapolis, just keep in mind that
January doesn't sound all that good to
doesn't
me.
Doesn't work in January. We kind of leave that out. November through probably February, but just a heads up on that.
I hate to tell you, Houston in August isn't happening either.
Well, that's kind of why we actually used to do them all year round. And we decided because of some of the weather cities that we're in, that our program is seen and heard, we decided to sort of start them in February. Right, exactly. And then go through April or May and then leave the hot months alone and the really cold months alone. That's just... we have a real sense of how this can work. 877-PLANNER. Before I get to a couple more emails, I should bring up, because we just didn't get a chance to do this, Professor Plum, on the reverse mortgages. I had mentioned, we talked about what they are, how they work. A couple of questions. First of all, we had a question on this. Can anyone who owns a home get a reverse mortgage?
Well, assuming you've got some amount of equity in it, potentially yes. Remember, they're not going to give you 100% mortgage. They're going to give you a percentage of the value of the house. That percentage is based on your age. The older you are, the higher the percentage. But even at that older ages, even when you're 80, 85, you're only going to get maybe 60% or so of the value of their home in the form of a reverse mortgage. When you're in your lower 60s or 65, 66, it's in the 35, 38% range of the equity, not the equity, excuse me, the value of the house. So how do you go about using a reverse mortgage in retirement? Why would you consider using a reverse mortgage in retirement? Mostly it's because you like the house you live in and you want to stay there for the rest of your life. But the cash flow to maintain the house, specifically either the mortgage or you don't have enough money saved up just for cash flow in general, is you just don't have enough cash flow to be able to stay there. You'd have to downsize and you don't want to do that. So one of the things you can do if you still have a mortgage, maybe you've got a $500,000 house with a $200,000 mortgage, you're 65, 66 years old, maybe it's $180,000, whatever the numbers work out to be, you could potentially do a reverse mortgage and pay off your existing mortgage. So pay off that mortgage that requires you make a payment, and maybe that frees up $1,500 a month. And with that $1,500 a month extra or lack of expense, now your retirement is much more comfortable and you can actually make it work with your Social Security, potential pensions, and distributions from the portfolio. So it's a cash flow game. On the other side, if you've got a free and clear house and you need some extra cash and you want either an income or you want the ability to draw down an equity line from time to time and just say, you know, I want $20,000 to do this, $20,000 to do that, $5,000, it doesn't have to be 20. Reverse mortgage can also help as well. But typically, reverse mortgages are done when you're getting closer to not having a whole lot of other assets. They're not done. I was talking to somebody the other day. Dad's 80 years old, plenty of income. He's got $1 million in investments, you know, mostly personal now, not all that much IRA. And somebody was telling him, you need to do a reverse mortgage. And I'm thinking, why? You know, just, I know why the person wanted him to do a reverse mortgage, but I couldn't understand why the 80-year-old would consider doing a reverse mortgage. And they were saying it's to preserve the equity in the house. Well, and I guess in a very rare situation, like we saw in 2008, 2009, where the market for real estate just cratered not long after that. So I took a reverse mortgage. I'm 80 years old. I have a $500,000 house and I take a $300,000 reverse mortgage. And then the property just drops. It was in Nevada. It was in Western
Phoenix. And
it goes
down to, and now it's worth $200,000.
Now it's worth $200,000. Yeah. I got my mortgage. I got everything I need out of this. And I could actually make money. But that doesn't happen all that often. And so there are reasons to and reasons to potentially not do it. Now, one of the more common ways to do a reverse mortgage coming that has happened in the last couple of years is something called the reverse mortgage purchase. And we saw this many times where somebody was moving from what many would call a priced state, like in Arizona or something, where the houses are nice, they're not outrageously expensive, but they wanted to move closer to kids in Southern California. That's not a reasonably priced area. But they didn't have a huge property of their own, but maybe they had a $200,000, $300,000 property in Phoenix, and they were able to sell it, but the property in California was going to cost them $450,000, $500,000 to be close to their kids, and then, more importantly, close to the grandkids. And so they went into purchasing this new property for $450,000. But they didn't really want to have a mortgage. They didn't want to have that payment on that $150,000 of extra money they had to put out for the house. And they didn't want to take it out of their portfolio because their portfolio was all IRA, and it would have been very expensive to do that. So they went into purchasing the new house, going into it upfront with a reverse mortgage. They bought the house for $450,000, put $300,000 down, and took a reverse mortgage out right then at the purchase date for $150,000. I mean, and it fit within everything they're doing.
So now it's free and clear.
Now it's to them, it's free and clear in the fact
not
that they don't
heirs.
Have a payment. And they felt that it was much more important for them to be around while the grandkids were young and they were able to spend time with the grandkids and do all that than leave the larger inheritance potential and live in Arizona or some other state that were far away from the grandkids. They felt it was more important to be by the grandkids than to leave a lot of money because, you know, if the kids are making it in Southern California, they're making a reasonable income too. You know, so
you would hope.
It's a way to do some things. And so that's not a bad thing. Is it the cheapest mortgage on the street? No. But it did it allow this particular individual, and I've seen it happen three or four times, did it allow them to have the retirement that they wanted, the ability to spend time with their grandkids and not worry about their budget so much? Yeah, it fit right into what they were doing.
Now, you need to be, the minimum age is 62 years
62,
old
yes.
in order to qualify. And at age 62, Professor Plum, it's still not necessarily a good idea unless it's,
unless
the,
it's
the last
mandatory,
resort.
Yeah. But typically, obviously, you're going to get more money based on the value of the house.
The older you are.
You get a larger percentage. And that's because the mortgage is growing. The mortgage is accruing interest. You're not paying anything. So that interest that the lender is charging you is just being applied to the balance every year. So you've got a growing debt on your property. And the debt is growing faster than the value of the property. And the person that is making the loan to you wants to make sure that the value of the debt doesn't exceed the value of the house. So the longer that it's going to grow, the more that mortgage is going to grow, the more the closer it's going to catch up to, or more chance it has to catch up to the value of the house. Now, if you live to be 100, 105, yeah, it's probably going to catch up and exceed the value of the house. House is expected to grow at 3 or 4% a year. The mortgage is growing at 6 or 7% a year, maybe more. And so you've got a value here and a value here, and they're starting to catch up with each other as time goes along. And they don't want, the person that loaned you the money doesn't want to see those ever come together.
Or go underwater.
And so, but that's why they'll loan an older person more money than the younger being 62 in this case, because the life expectancy isn't as long. It doesn't have as much time to grow. It doesn't. It's less likely to catch up.
Do they get into situations where, I mean, if the person does live long enough and they keep writing checks on the home and they'll keep honoring them even though it exceeds the value of the home?
If you do the ones that are controlled by the government, you can't be thrown out. And it could exceed the value of the house. I mean, a lot of reverse mortgages that happened in 2007, they exceeded the house not too long after that when the house went down in 2010 or 11. So, yeah, they're living on, you know, somebody else's money at this. But the way that the federal government, you know, does it. Now, if you go to a private lender outside of the constraints of the government, it's whatever's written into the plan.
Yeah. And keep in mind, too, that when you have one of these reverse mortgages, you have to keep up with the property taxes.
Right. Now they're underwritten for that.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. And you also have to
maintain the house.
Maintenance, because obviously once you're gone, the bank is actually going to own at least a good portion of the home. And they're going to want to recoup some of those costs. And if they have to sell it, they don't want to have to pay back taxes and have to pay to fix up the property. Okay, we got some trivia just ahead, some more emails, phone calls as well. 877-752-6637 spells out PLANNER on Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, taking care of you here as far as your money goes, answering your questions, talking to you about strategy and all of that. Whatever's on your mind, you can give us a call. Ask us questions, comments, anything like that. Call us at 877-PLANNER. You only got a few minutes to do that, though. Emails, you can do the same thing via email at wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. Now, coming up tomorrow, this is a theme, I guess. We're going to be talking about the need for lifetime income. Now, this goes along also with your workshop.
Retirement income challenges.
Yes, challenges and strategies. And this is the stuff that you talk about in all the upcoming workshops that we're going to have. Lifetime income, I guess the whole point of is to... You're not going to retire unless you have lifetime income. Let's put it that way.
Well, unless you have enough income to meet your needs.
And that's it.
Well, you're not going to want to retire.
Well, I don't know. Imagine anybody. Well,
I want to retire, but I don't have the income. So it kind of goes in hand in hand at that point.
Yeah, there are people who do it and say, well, I'll figure it out once I get there, but I have enough to last the next 6-7 years.
Or unfortunately, some people have to retire, and now they got to look at, okay, do I have enough income? And
exactly.
That's where it gets really anxious really quick.
And that's where the challenges lie. And even if you're behind on retirement, even if you had no chance or you just didn't for whatever reason, start saving until your 50s, your mid-50s, or whatever it is. You're a little bit late there, but that doesn't mean it's the end of the world. There are ways to correct that. Some of them are a little more difficult than others, and some solutions require a little bit more work, but hey, you know what? There's always a way around it. So if you want to come and watch the Brain Trust, I would highly suggest you do so. You go to wealthed.com and find out where they're going to be. And of course, listen and watch tomorrow's program, because that's exactly what we're going to be talking about, lifetime income challenges and lifetime income strategies. Okay, before we get to the next phone call and email, by the way, 877-PLANNER, our number. Our trivia for today comes from Gallup, as in poll. One out of seven American workers, by advanced calculus, that comes out to 14%, surveyed in early April 2015, and that was a total of 1,015 people participating. Okay, one out of seven American workers do not believe Social Security will ever pay them a penny of retirement benefits. I hope the follow-up question is, why? Why do you think that? You know why? Because you've been scared by the people in the higher reaches of government.
Well, there's a number of people who will not receive a benefit from Social Security.
Well, not because it's not there. It's because they're not eligible.
Or because they died.
Well, if you died, you're not eligible.
True.
You can't fill out the form.
Yeah. But somebody may get a benefit from your work record anyway. So there's a lot going on here. And so if you don't want a plan for having Social Security, fine. Do your retirement planning without including any Social Security. And that way, when it is available, at least in some form, you'll be pleasantly surprised. Or don't take it, you know, don't plan on it, complain about it, say it's never going to be there, and then don't take it. That's fine, too. They don't make you take it. It's just that we have paid into it, we want it, and we're going to take it. Most of us are. they are going to have Social Security in some form.
It'll be there. I can't even imagine that they're going to say, we're only going to pay you 75%, because to try to do that is politically, that's political suicide once again.
I was talking with a couple this morning, 62 and 58 years old, and one of their main concerns was, will they take our Social Security away? And no, they're not going to take a 62-year-old's Social Security away from them. They may change a 32-year-old's Social Security benefit, whether it's the fact that the workers that are working are going to have a higher wage base, so people that make more than $118,000 will pay more in Social Security taxes. They may very well raise the retirement age again from 67 to 70. They may change things within the way they do Social Security for people who are not yet on Social Security, but they are not going to affect somebody who is already eligible and or on Social Security.
They're using ridiculous, idiotic, quote-unquote fixes to a problem that doesn't exist. And this is where I have the problem.
But yeah, but they could raise the FICA rate. They could increase it from the current.
They could. It's not going to help anything, but they could.
Well, it will make the trust fund look better. At least it'll make the fund ledger look better.
And this is where I have trouble with the word trust fund, because so what if it goes to zero? If the trust fund goes to zero, allow it to go negative. You can still make the payments. Who cares?
The reality is the government's going to be
They're going to make the payments anyway.
When the trust fund is not collecting as much FICA taxes as it's paying out in benefits, where do you think the money's is it coming from? The trust fund? They're walking into a vault and pulling dollars out to make the payments? No. They're cashing in quote-unquote bonds that were issued to the government. So the federal government's funding it out of its general obligation anyway.
Well, but it's just numbers on a piece of paper. That's why I said, even if this number in the trust fund, which doesn't exist, even if it goes to zero and it starts going into negative, they can make 100% of the promised payments. It doesn't matter.
They will be making it.
You just have a red number instead of a black number, and it has a little negative in front of it. It makes absolutely no difference. And the scare tactics drive me crazy.
But they are trying to make it from what they perceive to be what they think is fiscal responsibility.
But it's the opposite.
So that the trust fund have money. And if they wanted to do that, they don't have to cut the people who are receiving benefits. They just have to increase the revenue on the other side, and they can do that by raising they can raise the retirement age, they can raise the tax rate, they can raise the wage base. There's lots of things that they are potentially going to do, which will happen long before they cut a benefit of somebody already receiving a benefit.
And keep this in mind, too. The government that issues the dollar out of thin air has no use for the dollars that we supposedly give them.
Those little pieces of paper?
That's not a dollar. That's a piece of paper that says you own a dollar. Dollars don't exist. They issue the dollar. Right?
The majority of the debt is not in the form of actual currency. Come on, really.
Do you think they ever
printed $19 trillion worth of $1 bills, even $100 bills?
Well, there is. It's $19 trillion of our savings. That's what the national debt is, our savings. That's the money we have.
Electronic.
But it's our savings. $19 trillion of our money sitting in bonds. Okay, anyway.
They're not going to take your Social Security away.
Thank you. Yes.
They may change the benefit formula. They may change some things. But they're not, especially for somebody receiving it, they're not going to take it away.
No, please,
They just changed some rules recently. They didn't take away the file and suspend option for anybody who was already filing and suspending. They didn't take away the file and suspend option for anybody who was filing and spending within 6 months of the enactment of the date. They took it away for people after the fact so they could kind of get used to it. But they didn't take it away for anybody who was already doing it.
Nope. And it's not going to happen. Thank you. Why did you get me going on that? All right.
Because it's fun.
It is fun. It is fun. Drives me crazy, but it's fun. If they only knew. Okay, if you need the Brain Trust, Professor Plum, or any of the Brain Trust members, advisors from Lucia Capital Group, their off-air number is 800-644-1150. Write that down, because you may want to talk to a Brain Trust advisor about something you heard on the show. 800-644-1150. That's it for us. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC.
Registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does a certain level of skill or training.